Capes on the Couch podcast is for entertainment purposes only. Dr. Issues is a psychiatrist, but he is not your psychiatrist and does not have knowledge of your individual situation. For any personal mental health concerns, please consult your own healthcare providers. For medical emergencies, please call 911 or the designated number in your area immediately. Remember that you are not alone and help is out there.
Hello and welcome to Capes on the Couch, where comics get counseling. I'm Anthony Sitko.
And I'm Dr. Issues.
This is issue number 147, and we're covering Victor Stone, Cyborg, as requested by present-level patron Ariel, who's continuing on her Teen Titans kick. So I'm sure we'll get Beast Boy next, or somebody else from the team, Raven maybe, I don't know, but I'm sure she's going to eventually get back to the Bat family, but she'll stick with the Titans for a bit. Anyway, just a quick reminder that we're still taking questions for our 150th episode, Ask Us Anything. So get those questions into capesonthecouch@gmail.com, or you can send us a tweet, or you can join our Discord. And really, any way you want to communicate with us, let us know, even if it's a Facebook DM or what have you. Go ahead and get those questions in, because we have a lot of fun stuff planned for 150, but a big part of that is going to be the AMA from the fans. We love engaging with and hearing from y'all. So without any further ado, we're just going to dive right into Cyborg, Victor Stone, created by Marv Wolfman and George Perez in DC Comics Presents number 26, October of 1980. He's really only 40 years old, I think, by virtue of the fact that he's been included in so many adaptations as of late, whether it's Teen Titans or Teen Titans Go or the Justice League movie. I think he's definitely escalated himself into a much more of a, I would say, a high B-list character. I don't know that I'd necessarily call him a full A-list, but he's definitely on a high B-list.
Yeah, that's fair.
But like I said, it's interesting when I was going through this and I was like, he was only created in 1980. And then I said, oh, right, basically all the Titans were created in that early 80s period. So Victor Stone, in the original iteration, Victor Stone is the son of two scientists who use him as a test subject for intelligence experiments, which he resents, and he falls in with a dangerous crowd as a way to rebel. So one of his parents' experiments brings a hostile creature from another dimension into his parents' laboratory. The creature kills his mother and gravely injures Victor before his father, Silas, can return it to its home dimension and close the portal. So his father then uses bleeding-edge experimental technology to save him, at the cost of the majority of his body now being robotic. And when Victor awakens, he lashes out at his father, saying he'd rather be dead than experimented on without his consent. So he joins the Teen Titans as a way to kind of find others with common experiences, other outcasts, freaks who want to do good but are kind of shunned by society because Victor, by again, virtue of the fact that he's overwhelmingly robotic, is kind of pushed aside. Mind you, again, this is the early 80s. This is pre-Google Glass. This is before a lot of modern technology has existed in the way that we know it. And so I don't want to say that he would be necessarily welcomed, but I think his reaction in 2022 would be a lot less, say, frightening than it would in 1980, 1981, when this was written.
Yeah, that's a great point. But at the same time, we'll get into that with one of the issues, or at least I will delve into that a bit, because yes, it would be considered more commonplace, but that doesn't necessarily help the person in the moment. But we'll dive into that.
Oh, agreed. I'm just talking about the reception that he would get externally as opposed to his own internal thoughts and processes. I'm just talking externally. I think he'd be received with at least more mild of a response than versus, you know, 40 some odd years ago. So he then merged with an alien artificial intelligence named Technus, which helped him restore his mind, although it turned his body into an entirely cybernetic being named Cyberion, and he had to stay on the Technus planet in order to survive. So this experience left him distant from humanity, and when he returned, he assimilated all the technology he could find until he was about the size of a moon. And then he was attacked by the Justice League and the other Titans, who were kind of arguing as to what the best way to deal with him was. The Justice League basically wanted to, for lack of a better term, destroy him, whereas the Titans said, he's our friend. He's in there somewhere. Let's do what we can. And so Beast Boy was able to reach Victor's humanity and got him to upload his consciousness to another suit, rendering Technus inoperable.
Hashtag
because comics.
So he gets dismantled during the Infinite Crisis story, and it takes almost a year to put him back together. And then he wakes up and he's like, what? Thomas Jefferson, what did I miss? What did I miss?
Nice.
Hey, I'm the one making the Hamilton reference this week. So in New 52, which tweaks his origin, it's still generally the same, but the explosion in his father's office is now related to a mother box, and Silas uses the technology to save Victor's life. And now Victor can access the New Gods library and discovers Darkseid is invading Earth in search of the anti-life equation. So if this sounds familiar, it's because this is basically what was used as the story in Justice League, both the Zack Snyder and the version by He Who Shall Not Be Named. So Victor joins the fight with the Justice League to battle the invaders and becomes a founding member of the team. In respect to what we were saying earlier, that he's definitely elevated. You know, previously in the original DC story, he was a Teen Titan who kind of worked his way up and eventually became affiliated with the Justice League. In the New 52, he's a founding member from day one. So after the Crime Syndicate, which is an evil mirror version of the Justice League from Earth 3, invades, they're basically the goatee wearing versions of the Justice League. If you know the Star Trek original series, the Cyborg is taken over by Grid, which is that Earth's cyborg, and it expelled all of his organic material. So Hal Jordan used the Green Lantern ring to suspend him until Silas could operate on him and revive him again. And this kind of brings them, it doesn't solve their relationship, but it definitely helps it. And there's a couple other stories, but you know, I really want to get into the issues here because I think there's a great amount that we can discuss when it comes to Victor. And so the theme for this week is tinkering. That's the theme for the issues here. And so the first one is adjustment to prosthetics. And, you know, this is something that we're definitely going to get into when we discuss the real world analog for treatment, but just the idea that you go from this entirely organic being, this corporeal form that we all recognize as human, to when you wake up, you know, there's this horrible accident. And when you wake up, I would venture to say probably 80% of his body is no longer flesh and bone. And comics are not, that is quite the mental toll, regardless of how much of his brain and his soul, quote unquote, is remaining intact. That still does a number on you mentally.
So there are many choices that need to be made, and I don't want to give short shrift to the original point in the comics where he says if he had a choice, he would not have done this. That is important to our definition of healthcare in the first place. We do things in emergencies to save lives. We do things with consent for the benefit of the person involved. And there's a huge difference. So we are often left as providers to deal with the aftermath of choices that we had to make on behalf of someone else. Hopefully it's with information obtained from relevant parties, family members, those close to them, the person that's designated to make that decision well ahead of time. Hint, hint, please do that, people. It really makes a difference, even if you don't think it'll ever happen to you. There is a 100% chance that you will die at some point, I'm sorry to say. I hope that's not a newsflash. To get back to the prosthetics piece itself, part of our identity is every single cell in our body. And the idea that we have cell turnover, that cells die, that our skin sloughs off and we continue to generate more things, that's a wonderful part of our existence. And it makes sure that we don't just become a used up husk by the time we're 10 years old. I'm grateful for the genetic process. I'm grateful for telomeres. You can look that up in terms of why we age, but also why we don't age immediately. And it's fairly long compared to a lot of other organisms, to be sure. Although there are some that have us beaten out. But if you end up with a disability, let's say, it could be minor. It could be, you know, let's say 10% of what you used to do. That's still humongous. if any of us woke up the next day and said, oh, I can do 10% less of what I was able to yesterday morning, we would probably have a significant freak out. Let's be real with each other. Now imagine it comes with pain. It comes with surgeries, which always carry their own risk. It comes with adaptation, relearning, because your nervous system doesn't always do things exactly the way they were going to originally be formatted, because nerves don't like being cut. And that's exactly what you're doing. You have loss. And then someone introduces the idea that you can have something that can take the place of what was gone. And on the surface, you think, in theory, that's wonderful because now you can regain that function. Except for the longest time in humanity's history, you didn't. It was purely a stand-in. It was a prop. There's a reason why it was called a peg leg. It's because it was a piece of wood that attached where your prosthetic stump is. And those things aren't exactly the most comfortable if you've ever tried to wear one. And everyone that I've talked to points out that we've gone and swung the pendulum so many times because you can get these things in so many different ways. What do I mean? You can have something that looks on the surface like a human leg that, if you're not paying attention, is supposed to be the same coloration as your own natural skin tone. And yet, when people see it for the first time, it raises questions. So now it can bring up old history. You can relive, let's say, a traumatic event that you didn't want to think about just simply to have a basic discussion. Or it can be purely mechanical in purpose and not resemble a leg at all. Or it can be adapted with polycarbon fibers that are in the shape of a flipper that actually allow for a sense of resiliency that when it touches the ground, it actually can propel you and is actually excellent for athletes. So in that case, there was a discussion as to whether or not it's performance enhancing. So it's gone above and beyond what we would expect the human body to be able to do. We now,
I remember, just to interject, I remember that was a big discussion with Oscar Pistorius.
That's right.
The South African runner who later became infamous for far more heinous acts. But when he was trying to qualify for the Olympics, there was a discussion of, does he have an advantage with his prosthetics? That because technically those blades don't fatigue in the sense that muscles do. There's no lactic acid buildup in the blades. So there was a question as to, would that give him an advantage? So that's something. And Matt is in the live stream, and he also suggested or brought up soldiers who lose limbs in combat. You know, it's another perfect example that there's an IED or something along those lines. And I mean, that we see that all the time. Unfortunately, it's a very common experience.
That's right. And everyone has the choice. You don't have to even get a prosthetic if you don't feel comfortable doing so. And I know I was focused on legs, but that's true for arms. That's true for any length of these things. There's also the improvements in cybernetics where, yes, you actually can get, for example, replacement hands that do have a mechanical purpose, that do function like limbs and do have a neural connection. So these things are coming down the road more and more every day. And so what used to be pure science fiction, when you look at someone like Cyborg, not so much anymore. But there's another side to this that I didn't want to leave out. And it's not just the extremities. It's not just the external. Transplants, replacement organs, mechanical hearts, all of these things allow a person to survive longer than they ever would have. And now they've been around for decades. However, the lengths that we have to go to make sure that people are able to tolerate those procedures and also deal with the medications that are necessary so that they don't have their immune system turn against them, which in turn also means they have a compromised immune system and therefore have to be careful of infections. That also has become a hot topic because some people are eligible for significant renal or heart transplants, but are refused because of hospital policy that they have to get vaccinated against COVID-19. And that's the person's choice to do so. I'm not trying to come down hard one way or another with this. What I'm saying is, anytime you're involving something outside of yourself, there is a guarantee that you are dealing with something that is going to be foreign for the rest of your life. It is something that you are literally living parallel with, not just completely accepting, whether your body wants to or not. So think of the amount of resilience you have to know that you cannot miss doses, for example, for a transplant medication or risk your life. You cannot, for example, just take for granted, if you have a kidney donor, that you can just go about your daily business. You could just as easily be back on dialysis. And I respect anyone that has been on dialysis for more than a year or two, because that is an amazing, draining process. Just to give some examples there.
Literally and figuratively.
Yes. For anybody that has actually heard the click of a mechanical heart as someone is waiting for a heart transplant, and knowing that that's going to be their quote unquote heartbeat for indefinitely, however long it takes, it's something you don't just put to the wayside in your brain. You're really almost dealing with another person. That's a part of you. And so when you consider the amount of energy that you have to expend just to do your daily tasks and not remind yourself of loss, because that's a form of grief. It may not be a whole person, but it's you. It's gone and it's not coming back. This is all just in that one issue. I am always amazed when I see someone that has gone through that by, you know, either by choice or by horrible circumstance. Either way, I bless you for being able to survive, and hopefully with whatever it is that you've been given, you're able to thrive afterwards.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, we didn't even touch on the notion of transhumanism and the people that are seeking out enhancements or alterations to their body. I'll just say alterations, mm-hmm. you know, as a catch-all term, but the folks that very much want to be implanted with various robotic implements or things of that nature, because they feel that it's the way to the next evolution of the human race. And it's funny because, you know, next week we're going to be talking about Black Bolt, you know, in the Inhumans and the supposed evolution of mankind and things of that nature. So it's just very interesting that we're seeing applications here in the real world. And Matt also says, this is why the ability to 3D print biological material is something I'm paying very close attention to lately. Absolutely. Because if you can 3D print biological material based on a person's own stem cells, based on a person's own genetic material, you're basically guaranteeing that you don't need, I don't want to say that you don't need any immunosuppressant medication, or you won't need any medication to address that. But if you're basically swapping out your own material with yours, then there's really no difference. And so that's going to be a game changer in terms of the prolonging of the human lifespan. And I mean, that has a whole series of bioethics, which we're not, again, going to get into, because this is not that kind of a show. But I mean, bioethics is a fascinating concept and discussion topic,
especially for someone who's on the co-chair of a bioethics committee for a hospital.
Yes, especially for someone like that. If only we knew somebody like that. So the second issue then, and this is something that we had some fun discussing in the write-up and just over the course of discussing this episode, is he considers acceptance of his form to be equivalent to stagnation. Victor is constantly upgrading himself, whether it's the quote-unquote software or the hardware. Victor, by the nature of his character, is constantly evolving, and it's not like a character changing suits where, you know, their outward appearance changes, but their abilities and powers still remain the same. His power set and what he can do is directly related to the changes and alterations that he makes in his hardware, which present as a function of who he is. And that is driven, again, by this notion that he's never fully done with himself. And so we're going to get into that in the in-universe treatment. But, you know, before we get there, Doc, you can certainly expound upon that a little bit.
Yeah, and this can take many forms, both internally and externally. And let's make this clear. There is nothing wrong with self-improvement, self-help, always striving to be better. That's a wonderful thing. We encourage everyone to do such, okay? I want to clear that up. So now that we got that out of the way, there is a level of perfectionism that starts to really harm someone. Let's just go with the external. And once again, not meant to insult anyone that's listening. I don't have an issue, for example, with cosmetic surgeries if a person has a certain image as to what they think is going to benefit them for multiple reasons, and they consult someone and have the proper counseling ahead of time as to what the expectations are, and they go through with it with a clear mind and appropriate resources and the support of the people that are around them and love them. That's great. If you've had your fifth surgery and you're still not satisfied with, for example, how your face looks, how your nose looks, how other parts of your body look, you've exhausted all of your financial resources to the point that you're about to declare bankruptcy, people are actually now reacting in a way that you didn't expect, saying that they don't recognize who you are anymore, then maybe there was a step too far. Not, once again, not to shame, just simply pointing out that accepting that level of feedback may have been beneficial to the point that you didn't create more problems for yourself. And you're still not satisfied with the result. That's what I'm getting at. It's body dysmorphia. That is a humongous problem, and one that unfortunately gets caught too late for the person. But it doesn't have to be about that end of it either. I know it fits in with the cyborg part because, yeah, you literally start structurally changing things. But what about the person that has an eating disorder? What about the person that is excessively dieting or exercising or using laxatives or starvation, dehydration, or conversely, they feel like they're constantly underweight and they decide that they overeat? They just simply can't accept, but because they're not comfortable with themselves, they start shaming other people in order to try and make themselves feel better. All of those things can come into play. But what about not just the physical side? What about the mental and emotional side? What if you are an incredible perfectionist and therefore you keep trying to iterate on one version of a piece of work or a creative idea that you're doing constantly, but you actually never decide to publish because you feel like everyone's going to reject it because it doesn't meet your standards, but it would still be a great story or a great artwork that other people may enjoy and don't get the chance? What if it's a matter of things that you're doing at work that people point out you don't have to be there until 10 o'clock at night working on that project? Because let's be real, you're putting in more work than anybody else, and you're upset that nobody else matches what you do. But their point is, it's because their day is done and they actually want to spend time with their family. And yet, despite all the work that you do, your boss doesn't recognize it. Not that it's bad, but they point out, yeah, you did a good job. But you didn't want a good job. You wanted it to be the best job. You wanted the recognition that it was the greatest. And therefore, because you didn't get that recognition, you classify it as a failure. And so you actually ask for a redraft of that same project, even though the rest of the company has moved on. These are examples that I'm giving that are not meant to be hypothetical because they're from my own career experience and what other patients have described to me in terms of how they have tried to deal with things in life. And the scary part is, although what I'm saying for the most part may sound very intuitive to the person that's saying them to me, they weren't saying it as a realization. They were saying it as their continued argument as to why they were correct. This is not something that is taken lightly. This is something that becomes ingrained in what the person is willing to do on a daily basis. And if it gets to that point to the detriment of every other aspect of their life, then that classifies as harmful. So if the number one thing that you're doing whenever you're saying that you're yoga meditating each morning
And you're noticing that it's getting to the point of an obsession that you actually forget to eat, or you actually are late for appointments, or you actually don't get everything done for the kids before they go to school, then yeah, these all might be situations where having an outside view, as scary as that may be, could be the best thing. And actually doing it even if you disagree with the person. Because having that extra perspective that is not as directly intertwined with what you're doing could end up leading to a better quality of life. This is not something that qualifies per se as OCD. I don't want to give it a diagnosis like that automatically. It might classify as OCPD, as in the personality disorder, because of how intuitive it is to maintain perfectionism at all costs, because it does have its own benefits up to a point. But once again, if you find that you are truly pushing back against even those that love and support you on a regular basis, do yourself a favor and just give yourself that extra pause and review it before going further.
Very well stated. Now I'm going to bring up Matt in the live chat brought up another point from a different perspective. Isn't it also kind of like a guy constantly getting new and better power tools for his garage or fishing gear or add-ons for his car? He said, at least in a utilitarian sense. Now, to some respect, yes, it's just a guy gear acquisition syndrome. It's about constantly needing to always have the latest, the greatest. I know a couple friends of mine are camera fiends and they're constantly buying new lenses. Our friend Brian is constantly has to have the latest computer, the newest gaming system, whatever it is. That there are people like that. But I think that the distinction here that Doc is drawing, and I think did a masterful job of explaining of, is because it's inherent to the person and it's not just this external thing. Because a guy getting new and better power tools for his garage still is ultimately, I don't want to say encumbered or inhibited, but he can have the best tools in the world. He's only as good as he is. A good craftsman can work regardless of the tools. He's still ultimately inhibited by who he is and what he can do with those tools. Victor, on the other hand, can change so much about himself and what he can do by changing a part of who he is, literally. And I think there's a major distinction there, both from, again, the external perspective and also the internal perspective.
And to add to that, though, I do see, though, where that could be a concern, where it gets to the point that even the acquisition of new things becomes its own thing. If you are at the point where you have the classic hoarder house where you can't move, you can't even have a pathway to your door because there's just so much stuff built up over that one particular topic, or you're losing sleep to the point that you're deprived because you're constantly using the items that you got, be it new technology or anything that you shop for or anything that you work on, even if it doesn't cost money, if it's just music, but the neighbors are now complaining because it's 4 a.m. and they've had to hear you blasting out your latest stuff from your soundtrack, that still can really cause problems. I don't want to make it sound like, oh, it's just the money side, or oh, it's just the possession side, or oh, it's just the emotional side, or oh, it's just the behavioral side. It's all of it. All of it. Any of it in excess for the sake of what you consider to be the best, and it's just destroying everything else around it. I think that's bad.
I can't disagree with that at all. So the third issue that we're going to discuss, because I think we can go back and forth on that, you know, ad infinitum. So I want to move on to the third one, his relationship with his father. Now, I said it has improved, at least in the new 52, it has improved, but there are still deep-seated trust issues because of everything going on. And I think this was one of the things that was done very well in the Justice League movie, specifically in the Snyder Cut. And, you know, I know as soon as I say those words, I'm going to have the Twitter army coming after me, making sure that I dare not speak any ill towards that film whatsoever, which I thought was okay. But I did appreciate the expansion of Victor's storyline, specifically with respect to his relationship with Silas. And I just thought that that was very well done, because it showed you how Victor and Silas, they didn't quite connect. And it wasn't until after the accident that Silas realized what he had lost and what he wasn't spending time on. And so there's a lot of regret on Silas's part and on Victor's part. That resentment there is starting to fade. It still exists. And I don't know that it's ever fully going to go away, but it's a very interesting topic to discuss.
I think you hit on the major word there with regret. First of all, I'll admit, I have a unique take on regret that's evolved over the years. And it's probably pretty controversial, but I still think it's worth putting out there in the universe. And if it needs reiteration or iteration, as I should say, to change the nuance of it, so be it. Regret is the idea that you have pushed the boundaries as to what you would consider acceptable in your life, and it had a negative consequence. Saying it that way allows for someone to take chances. If you don't want regrets, then know ahead of time exactly how things are going to work and pick the best thing that you're going to enjoy. There you go. Problem solved. Except we're not in that world. We have the future being unknown, and we have variables that are known and unknown, and most of them are not controllable. So I don't think regret is as horrible as we make it sound, but it is something that we tend to avoid because having too much of it may mean that you took too many chances and therefore you are putting yourself at greater risk than you should have, both physically, mentally, emotionally, all of it. In the case of a father and son, and honestly, any close relationship, I don't want to just limit this to father and son. There are going to be opportunities to strengthen that bond. And any opportunity that doesn't strengthen it, by definition, is going to weaken it because that's the nature of what time and distance does. This is an active process. And the biggest impact that Silas had on his son, well, it's two, basically. It's the fact that he's born. I'm sorry, I'm not going to give a play-by-play on that. That's not my role. But it's when he's saved. And if we're going to go with the second one, which I'm sure we are, then it's fascinating to know how Victor views it compared to how Silas views it. Silas's point is, and this is going to hit heavy probably for some people that thinks of certain topics this way, life at all costs. Meanwhile, on several occasions, Victor's point is quality at all costs. They do not have to be in opposition of each other, but they are going to create some very tense and awkward discussions. So I'm not going to go by the dramatic comic book version of this, because most people aren't going to have a person in their family that's going to have the technology to save their life in that type of situation by their own hand. But they are going to have situations where you're going to have to make difficult choices as to how you want to live. It doesn't have to be about health either. It can be as simple as your location. How far away from the family are you going to be? You're really moving out 500 miles away when no one else in the family lives more than 50 away from each other? You're really going to take a completely different job and field somewhere else, and you're going to just abandon us? That's how some family members may feel. Meanwhile, there may be some family members that say, wow, I wish I did that when I was your age. Good for you for taking that chance. You know, I'm sorry I can't be there in person, but I got your back. Just make sure that you call or write once in a while. Everybody has different perspectives on those sorts of things. But especially when it comes to decisions that are not easily reversible, especially when it comes to, let's get back into the healthcare, when it comes to end of life. What do you mean when we're all making this decision in the ICU that your siblings said they wouldn't want life-saving measures? Why would they say that? That sounds barbaric. On the other hand, wait, you're telling me this person that I spent my entire life with, my own spouse, they were a teenager when they wrote that they wanted everything possible done and every machine hooked up and all of that. They've lived a great life. They wouldn't want this, but it's the last thing that's written down.
And that's what the staff is saying that they're going to go with in terms of the decision. And what about the person that actually goes through a lot of things, survives it, and now can tell you after the fact, and now we really are getting back straight to the comic, I don't agree with the decision that was made. How do you move forward from that? How do you consciously say to yourself, in my current state of mind, with all of the emotional influence that happened at the time, I wanted to do right by you, and you are now telling me that it was wrong. Do you still want to associate with that person? Do you still trust that person to do that again? You can always change your mind when you survive, and there may be resentment about that. How dare you question the fact that I had the opportunity for you to see one more sunrise and sunset. The idea that you still got to see people that are important to you because I gave you a chance when, in theory, I could have just withheld the Narcan like you told me to. These are the types of things that people deal with. And even if they're not thinking of it in the moment, oh, they are definitely thinking about it every day, week, month, and year, decade, and the rest of their lifetime because of those things. And when you break it down like that, I don't know a single person that is going to be able to get through life, because I know that trope, I know that stereotype, that cliche, live life with no regrets. That is a tall order. And if you seriously have never once pushed that boundary where you said, you know what, I think I can make either the quality of life or the quantity of life just a little bit better and just a little bit longer, then I would question whether or not you really would have had an opportunity for any regrets in the first place.
Wow. That is incredibly powerful. And as I've said before, and as longtime fans know, I'm on the side, I'm an attorney who does estate planning, and I have to help people write up DNRs. And I have to help people write up living wills, advanced health directives, and things of that nature. And these are the kinds of things that have to be discussed, that have to be thought about. If you're diagnosed with something terminal and then, you know, on the way out, oh, by the way, I have cancer, I have 6 months to live, and then 2 months later, I have a heart attack, is it worth bringing them back? For what? To your point, what's the quality of life going to be? What's the quantity of life going to be? These are not easy questions to ponder at all. Certainly not from someone who was brought back that may or may not have wanted to be brought back in, say, a vegetative state. We can talk about that, you know, in terms of a real world analog. Yes, the person is physically alive, but they're functionally brain dead or they have diminished capacity. And I'm not here to get into a religious or a philosophical or an ethical argument about some of those considerations, but there's something to be said about the idea that at that point, you're just a shell of a body. And is that really worth living? That's a question for another podcast. That's a question for people a hell of a lot smarter than I am. But you do raise some amazing points. And I hope that at the very least, our listeners have some food for thought when it comes to making decisions about a DNR, about advanced health directives and things of that nature, because they're questions that we all have to answer at some point. As you said, it's 100% chance we're going to die. It's just a question of when. And hopefully for me, I've got a long, long time to think about that. So we are going to take a pause. We're going to plug our sponsor, BetterHelp. And when we get back, we'll get into treatment. Stay tuned. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Is there something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? BetterHelp will assess your individual needs and match you with a licensed professional therapist. You can begin communicating within 48 hours.
It isn't a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's professional counseling done securely online. BetterHelp has a network of over 15,000 counselors with a broad range of expertise. You can log in and message your counselor anytime and get timely and thoughtful responses. You can also schedule regular video or phone sessions. No waiting room required.
BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if you feel you don't have a good connection. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial help is available. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. Visit betterhelp.com/capes, that's better, H-E-L-P, and join the over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional.
Special offer for Capes on the Couch fans. Get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/capes.
Hi, I'm Tanner.
And I'm Lindsay.
And together we host a podcast called Not If I Reboot You First.
It's a show where we take our favorite properties and reboot them before Hollywood gets the chance to.
We also do adaptations and spin-offs and sequels, but everybody seems to call those reboots too.
It's everyone's favorite buzzword.
Sometimes we make something really good, like when we turned The Mummy into a proper pilot for the Dark Universe.
Sometimes things go bad and I drunkenly yell at J.K. Rowling for an hour.
And sometimes it gets really weird and we time crash the entire Mighty Ducks franchise into a single universe.
So join us every week for something that's a little bit like brainstorming fanfiction.
Follow us on Twitter at NIIRYFpod. Those are the letters for the name of the show, and it's pronounced
NIRF! I turned Princess Belle into Iron Man once.
Wait, what?
This is Philip Kennedy Johnson, and you're listening to Capes on the Couch.
And we're back. So treatment in universe for Cyborg. And the thing that we were talking about earlier, specifically with respect to acceptance of its form and stagnation, I think is going to play a key role in how Doc understands and goes forward with treatment. So I'm very curious to see where we're going to go with this.
Yeah. So if I'm dealing with a guy that is this much into tech, and at this point, the technology is a part of him, it's not just the hardware side, because I know that could be a big focus. I'm much more on the software and programming side, where that takes a lot of effort. And there's a reason they're called languages. It allows for this hybrid of what the human brain is capable of versus what you can do with machines, electricity, and pretty much ones and zeros, because that's all it comes down to. So this is not my area of expertise. I want to learn how to code. I want to know what he's most comfortable with, because how you write something is often the best expression of your soul. And I know we don't talk about that necessarily when you think of programming, but really, that's what you're doing. You're giving life to something that otherwise wouldn't exist. And it's one of the most creative things you could ever do. So that's what Cyborg has been trying to do with himself for the longest time. And as we already hinted at, is it just to continue with modest self-improvement that is productive for everyone around? And if so, then I love how Anthony came up with this. I won't take full credit. Has he ever gone gold? Is he always in the alpha and beta versions? Because that implies that you're never quite ready for prime time. Like, no. You've been doing a lot of great hero work. You have definitely made friends. You've done so much. Come on, man. Go ahead. Don't just worry about CES and what's coming in the future. Have your actual model on the shelves. You know, this is who you are. This is what it is. And go ahead and show it. It's great. It's wonderful. Be proud. Don't just be proud of what can be. Be proud of what you are now. And that's true for a lot of us, you know, but we'll get into the other side of that when we talk about out of universe. But I thought in universe, I just think that would be super cool because I get to learn something useful. He gets to be a teacher, which is one of the best ways you could still improve yourself. As a matter of fact, in the healthcare field, we say see one, do one, teach one. You know, when we know in reality, it's more like see a whole bunch, do a few and teach forever. But whatever, it still stands. But in addition to that, you know, he actually maybe gets more comfortable with the now.
Matt says, dear Lord, Cyborg is Activision. Because the whole time I was thinking, as you're describing this, I was like, yeah, he's never satisfied. He's just that. Yeah, he's a AAA game that he's going to go gold, but there's a day one patch. And then there's a couple weeks down the line, there's another bug update. And then there's DLC. And then there's more stuff, to say nothing of loot boxes and all that garbage. But yes, that was the analogy that we came up with. And when we were typing this out, I was like, has he ever gone gold? Or would he ever consider going gold? Which, unfortunately, in this day and age, I don't even know if that's a term anymore, because I know it used to be when games would, or when software would physically ship onto the shelf. Now everything is downloadable and software as a service exists. So you never really, nothing's ever really done. It's just the latest iteration before the next one, before the next one, before the next one. So you and I have kind of just dated ourselves in that respect, because that's a concept that doesn't really exist anymore, at least in this day and age.
Yeah.
But out of universe, I know we talked a lot about real world analogs for things, but essentially what this boils down to is he's a multi-amputee with family relationship issues. I mean, there's a lot more to it than that, but if you want to boil it down to its simplest form, that's the real world analog for Cyborg. And Victor, still, even without the superpower stuff, there's a lot of trauma there. There's no other way to describe it. It is trauma, and he's got to learn to work with that.
Yeah, so there have been some very humanistic techniques when it comes to this type of trauma, specifically the grief associated with it, because some of us may find parts of this bizarre if you take it out of context, but has anyone ever had a funeral for their arm or their leg? Has anyone ever had a separate service for when their kidney shut down? You know, just even saying it, it's like, I don't really think of it that way, but that's how big the loss is. It really is. And no, I'm not advocating that you have to do it that way, but I do think you have to give it that level of concern. And the fear that sometimes creeps in for people is that, well, if I do that, then I'm basically just waiting for my death, like piece by piece. And that's clearly not what we're intending. But there is a comfort in the idea that your changes are going to be acceptable to you, that it's okay to lay rest to your past life, and the adaptations that you've made and the progress that you made are a constant tribute, an homage to what you had before. That way, every day is an opportunity for you to continue to pay tribute to what you were able to do before. There's nothing wrong with those types of changes. And I know we just spent, you know, the last 15, 20 minutes just talking about how you shouldn't just constantly look for the perfection in every single part of the future and enjoy the moment. Well, at the same time, in order for you to enjoy the present, that also means that you have to lay rest to the past. So we're tying all of this together. When it comes to that type of grief, it may be beneficial to journal that you've actually had things that you already accomplished that if it weren't for the fact that you had that in the first place, you would have never done. In other words, and this, don't get me wrong, this doesn't work for everyone, but what would this have been like if you literally were born without that particular appendage or that particular part of your body? Think about that, because you're able to adapt now because other parts of your body are still there. And therefore, the fact that, for example, let's say we gave the example, if you're a combat veteran, that means that you are able to serve proudly and with great proficiency and duty because everyone saw what you had at the moment, and they're willing to honor the fact that you made a sacrifice that many people would never have even taken the opportunity to for the benefit of humanity at large. So there is a sense of gratitude towards the effort, even if it comes with significant pain and loss. Man, oh man, it's hard to hold those two thoughts at the same time. And that's pretty much why having someone on the outside pointing these things out in different moments can be really beneficial. Also, I'm going to get a little more granular and a little more practical than I tend to do and let people know that for some reason it became chic many years ago when it came to these types of injuries to simply say, okay, you're going to have to live with this pain. And I know the pendulum had swung very far the other way and pointed out, well, there are ways to manage pain. And through many different situations, it ended up with the use of medications a bit beyond what would have been feasible for a proper system so that we didn't end up with the crisis that we have now. I'm not putting all the blame squarely in one area, but I'm willing to acknowledge it. But there are safe ways to manage pain above and beyond just medications. There's also therapy techniques that can help with that. Physical therapy is still the number one way that people generate the greatest practical use for if they've had a loss of limb. There's also the same type of mindfulness and abilities to reframe what you have now and the modifications that can be made that allow a person to pretty much do everything that they need to in life without having the loss of function, even if they have the loss of that physical part. Setting boundaries of expectations is another part of it. This is all usually multifactorial and more than one person, because obviously a single psychiatrist, counselor, social worker is not going to be doing all of this. The same way one physical therapist, one surgeon is going to not have to see the person and do all of the necessary routines, or the researcher that is trying to make things as close to our accepted typical reality as possible when it comes to modern technology. So my takeaway for all of this and for this episode as a whole is, as I said, there is a reason we live in the present. It's because tomorrow is unknown and yesterday is gone.
And tomorrow is not even guaranteed.
Yeah.
That's why they call it the present, because every day is a gift. It's cliche, but it's true. So with all that being said, and with the help of Carrington from the Real Dudes podcast, we're going to get Victor Stone on Dr. Issues' couch.
Hello, Victor. I'm Dr. Issues.
Hey, Doc. Let's do this. I'm all in.
Okay. Okay.
Here's a list of the last three angry outbursts I've had within the past month. I've also included my vitals, my calorie count, and I have a full database of the last 30 years of psychotherapeutic and psychotropic recommendations by the American Psychiatric Association for diagnosis and the DSM and the ICD-10, 11, and 12.
There is no ICD-12 yet.
I have my ways.
But you don't even know what your diet...
I have taken the MMPI inventory, and the standard deviation of error after multiple runs is within an acceptable range for any PhD, PsyD, MD, or DO with an acceptable clinical certification. I also preferenced any abnormal responses with screening exams for depression, ADHD, psychosis, addiction, and monitored all of my hormonal levels to make sure there was no underlying physiological causes.
You don't need to screen yourself for addictions unless someone else...
The Titans say I'm addicted to tech, but they don't live with it like I do. I'm showing them that I am in full control of myself. And thanks to this research, I've found a way to use Monte Carlo simulations for how likely I am to have any emotional response at any moment. I never thought about the human brain like this before. I can modify my eyes via a functional MRI device. If I could just find the proper shielding against my own body.
That is dangerous and not fully diagnostic yet. I love the enthusiasm, but how do I put this? Back off, can't you?
Huh? I thought my grunt work would make this easy for you. I am willing to undergo pharmacogenetic testing for the best medication. Isn't this what you do?
No. Yes. Well, it's complicated.
I know, right? If it took me a few all-nighters to get the reams of data necessary for an introductory session, I can't imagine what you have to do for multiple patients every day of the week.
You want to know what I do? Honestly?
Yeah, I'll admit. I thought this was all psychobabble nonsense, but there's some real rigor behind neuroscience.
I talk to people and they talk back to me. I make suggestions based on that information along with the biological and social components and repeat that process with the patient's input.
That does sound like psychobabble nonsense. I mean, I can get you a copy of my last schematic.
Please, tone it down. I'm begging at this point. Look, I'm impressed by your efforts, but it's clear to me that you have no other format for viewing yourself. You're incredibly smart. You're laser focused. No pun intended. You realize that others think something is up, and yet you double down on what you know. You're isolating yourself, and you don't even know it.
The hell I am. I've been a key component in some of the most important events in human history, universe history. You don't know me.
There's that anger you mentioned.
So my cortisol level?
Nope. Don't care.
Say what?
Dude, just talk to me. How are you? How are those you care about? What's your favorite food?
This isn't a date, Doc.
Not like that.
But it is a human interaction of getting to know one another. Please, just stick to the basic.
Nah, man, if you don't recognize I'm Linux all the way—
Say something not related to research or tech. Now.
Sorry, Doc. Gotta reboot a few things.
No, you're not avoiding this. I realize this is all a smokescreen now. Ever heard the phrase, if you can't dazzle him with your brilliance, then baffle him with your bullshit? Well, sir, you've managed to create the ultimate bullshit brilliance hybrid. Drop it.
Well, damn. You cut real deep with that. I'm not sure this will work out.
Why not? Are you willing to do something that doesn't have a treasure trove of data to mine? Actually, I think it's the opposite. You get the chance to look at your own personal black box that's been hard-coded into your psyche. The more you're willing to let go, the greater the likelihood of a new finding.
You really want to do this without downloading the latest?
I don't care. Don't care. Unless you talk about your father.
Well, I'm sure you can Google his name. Man, just let it go, will you? And that's the problem with practitioners of soft sciences. They fall back on outdated formatting. Are you Freud 2.0 or something?
Only if you're Cyborg Plus.
I don't understand. I was expecting you to say Cyborg 22 or something.
No, I mean, look, there's nothing wrong with being comfortable. I apologize for my frustration. Look, you dig technology. Sweet. It's vital for you, clearly. But what else makes you who you are? You don't have to answer that for me. Just
myself. Yeah. My dad was the same way. Just colder. At least I'm around people that can make me feel good once in a while. It's a nice situation, you know? Not trying to rain on their parades or nothing. I can't sit around watching TV or doing endless workouts or something. I like making a difference. But I can always be better. I'm not sure anyone understands that.
That was the best thing you said this entire time. It seemed really tough. Does get easier. Definitely gets easier.
You're opening my mind, Doc.
Thanks.
I should have been downloading Becca and Ellis instead of Philosophical Stoics when I was younger. I could do a PubMed search with the proper tags as soon as I leave. Or I could just journal for 5 minutes tonight.
You're catching on. I'll see you next session. I trust you've already logged it on your calendar.
Booyah!
All right, well, thanks again to Carrington for playing the role of Victor. You can check out the Real Dudes podcast at realdudespodcast.com. And they're available pretty much everywhere you find podcasts. They are an indie video game podcast. They talk about video games, specifically indie ones. I mean, they'll go into some big studio titles, but they tend to focus on the smaller ones and show the indies some love, you know, because as we said before, Activision doesn't really need any more money that they can just spend on a title that gets thrown out half finished with a day one download. And I'm not going to get on that soapbox any more than I need to. So recommended reading. We've got two stories. Blackest Night is Doc's recommendation. It's not a cyborg centric story, but it does involve the Titans a lot. And as Doc says, Victor and the other Titans have to basically do everything that they can to deal with all of the resurrected, now Black Lanterns, zombie characters essentially coming back from the dead. The other one is JLA Titans. And this is the where a lot of the Siberian stuff happens. So it's a very Victor-centric story. So we'll have links to all that stuff in the show notes. So next episodes, Black Bolt, then Echo. And just to clarify, because I forgot to mention this at the start of the episode, technically we were supposed to do Echo this week. We're still working on finding a deaf podcaster or a hard of hearing podcaster to come on and collaborate with us. And so we said we'd rather push it back and do the episode right rather than just cram it in to fit an arbitrary deadline. So we shuffled the schedule a little bit. So that's why we're doing Echo a little bit later. And then the 150th episode, Spectacular. So get those questions in either via email or tweet or Discord, however it is that you want to get us the questions, to ask us anything. We'll have a fun little mailbag. And like I said, we've got a couple of other extra special surprises. So as always, you can find all of our episodes on our website, capesonthecouch.com. And we're on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Capes on the Couch. And we've got links to all that stuff in the show notes so that you don't actually have to type all that stuff out. It's just available to click. And if you really want to, if you really enjoy the show and you want to support it, go to patreon.com/capesonthecouch and you can subscribe and unlock additional content, early access, uncensored material, and some trade paperback reviews as well that Doc and I need to get off our asses and get back on to. So all that being said, Doc?
If you go through life like a cyborg, you're going to be accused of having a heart of stone. So show your human side and ensure yourself that you'll be a victor.
Masterful. Absolutely masterful. I marvel every week at how you do that, but I do see how you pull it off. For Doc Issues, I'm Anthony Sitko. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
Capes on the Couch podcast is for entertainment purposes only. Dr. Issues is a psychiatrist, but he is not your psychiatrist and does not have knowledge of your individual situation. For any personal mental health concerns, please consult your own healthcare providers. For medical emergencies, please call 911 or the designated number in your area immediately. Remember that you are not alone and help is out there.